Today is Friday, May 21st, and you are listening to International Edition on the Voice of America. I am Gina Dolfo, broadcasting from Washington, D.C. Coming up, ceasefire in effect between Israel and Hamas.
I'm against the ceasefire with Gaza. I think we should continue the fighting until Hamas will collapse totally.
Plus, violence and weather displaces more than 50 million people.
Last year, conflict and disasters caused more than 40 million new displacements, with some people forced to move many times out of their homes.
Also, scientists race to reduce the scourge of malaria. Our top story today is in the Middle East. Israelis and Palestinians awoke to a morning without sirens and rocket strikes after an Egyptian-mediated truce between Israel and Hamas began early Friday. While some Israelis welcomed the ceasefire after 11 days of fighting, others rejected it and said Israel should have fought on. Despite the truce announcement, Hamas warned it still has its, quote, hands on the trigger, unquote, and demanded Israel end violence in Jerusalem and address the damage in the Gaza Strip after the worst fighting in years. Aerial bombardment of the densely populated area killed 232 Palestinians, while rocket attacks killed 12 people in Israel during the conflict. 25-year-old student Mark Dan Kiri says Israel failed in its objective to destroy Hamas.
I'm against the ceasefire with Gaza. I think we should continue the fighting until Hamas will collapse totally. The fact that we sit in here, peacefully drinking coffee and eating our croissant, it's only a matter of time until the next operation in Gaza. So it will take 1 year, it will take 2 years or 5 years, but we'll continue to fight. I think we have the perfect opportunity to win. And if we need to win, so we will win. We are strong in Ashdod, we're strong in Ashkelon, we're strong in Sderot. We will wait 1 week, 1 month, but we will win.
That's 25-year-old Israeli student Mark Dan Kiri. President Joe Biden hailed a ceasefire reached between Israel and Hamas fighters on Thursday and said the United States would help Gaza with humanitarian relief aid. Biden, in brief remarks at the White House, also said the United States will replenish Israel's Iron Dome missile defense system that helped repel Hamas's rockets.
In my conversation with President Netanyahu, I commended him for the decision to bring the current hostilities to a close within less than 11 days. I also emphasize what I've said throughout this conflict. The United States fully supports Israel's right to defend itself against indiscriminate rocket attacks from Hamas and other Gaza-based terrorist groups that have taken the lives of innocent civilians in Israel. The Prime Minister also shared with me his appreciation for the Iron Dome system, which our nations developed together and which has saved lives of countless Israeli citizens, both Arab and Jew. I assured him of my full support to replenish Israel's Iron Dome system to ensure its defenses and security in the future. Over the last 11 days, I've spoken to the Prime Minister 6 times. I've also spoken with President Abbas of the Palestinian Authority more than once, and part of our intense diplomatic engagement. And I want to also thank the Secretary of State, the Secretary of Defense, our National Security Advisor, and everyone on our team for their incredible efforts to bring this about, this outcome that we're about to see. You know, we've held intensive high-level discussions, hour by hour, literally. Egypt, the Palestinian Authority, and other Middle Eastern countries, with the aim of avoiding the sort of prolonged conflict we've seen in previous years when the hostilities have broken out. I extend my sincere gratitude to President al-Sisi and the senior Egyptian officials who played such a critical role in this diplomacy. I also appreciate the contributions of other parties in the region who've been engaged in working toward the end of hostilities. These hostilities have resulted in the tragic deaths of so many civilians, including children. And I send my sincere condolences to all the families, Israeli and Palestinian, who have lost loved ones, and my hope for a full recovery for the wounded. The United States committed to working with the United Nations, and we remain committed to working with the United Nations and other international stakeholders to provide rapid humanitarian assistance and to marshal international support for the people of Gaza reconstruction efforts. We will do this in full partnership with the Palestinian Authority, not Hamas, authority, in a manner that does not permit Hamas to simply restock its military arsenal.
That's U.S. President Joe Biden. At this week's summit of the Arctic Council in Iceland, U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken voiced alarm at Russia's military buildup in the region. The Arctic Council has 8 members with sovereignty over lands within the Arctic Circle: Canada, Denmark, Finland, Iceland, Norway, Russia, Sweden, and the United States. Henry Ridgewell reports.
Just 1,000 kilometers from the North Pole, Russia is flexing its military muscle. Even at the height of the Cold War, the Nagurskoye Air Base was a remote outpost. Now, Russia's northernmost military base is a hive of activity, able to handle nuclear-capable strategic bombers. The Kremlin is projecting its power deep into the Arctic. Major General Igor Churkin of Russia's Northern Fleet Air Defense said ensuring peace and security in the Arctic is a major task set by the state, and it's the Northern Fleet that was put in charge of this. NATO has also increased its military activity in the Arctic. U.S. Air Force bombers have been training alongside Norwegian forces in recent months. The military build-up formed a tense backdrop for the Arctic Council summit Thursday in Reykjavik as Russia took over the rotating chairmanship of the forum from Iceland. U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken urged other council members to oppose Moscow's attempts to control Arctic shipping as climate change opens up new routes, and voiced concern over Russia's military build-up. Russia criticized NATO's activities in the region. The military activity in the Arctic poses an increasing risk, says Katerina Kurtisova with the European Leadership Network. Russia says it wants to use its chairmanship to focus on sustainable development, protecting the indigenous communities in the Arctic, and on climate change. Scientists say the Arctic is warming twice as fast as other regions, with dramatic effects. Henry Ridgewell for VOA News, London.
As U.S. troops began withdrawing from Afghanistan after 2 decades of war, U.S. lawmakers questioned top officials this week about the Biden administration's strategy for the region following the end of military involvement. VOA's congressional correspondent Catherine Gibson has more from Capitol Hill.
Afghan forces are training for the moment less than 4 months from now, when they will no longer have the backing of the U.S. military after almost 20 years. The American departure will be a decision point for Afghans, warned U.S. lawmakers this week.
Success in Afghanistan can't mean more to the United States than it means to the Afghans. And at the end of the day, I believe it won't mean more to us than the Afghans. I believe the Afghans, having seen the benefits of improved quality of life over 20 years, will decide that they want to keep that rather than to go backwards.
Presidents of both parties have struggled to define U.S. objectives in the region. Biden's decision to finally depart on the anniversary of the September 11th terrorist attacks, which prompted the U.S. intervention in Afghanistan, is drawing Republican criticism.
The fact that the president chose this date, the 20th anniversary of the most horrific terrorist attacks in our nation's history, indicates this was a calendar-based political decision. It was not based on conditions on the ground, which is the strong bipartisan recommendation Congress has given to both the Republicans and Democrats presidents over the last decade.
But Defense Department officials told lawmakers the nature of the terrorist threat has changed since the days when Osama bin Laden used Afghanistan as his base.
We've got terrorists, international terrorist groups operating in the Middle East and Africa, northern part of Africa. It's not the nature of the threat has changed over the past 20 years, but the threat emanating from Afghanistan to the United States and our allies has been significantly degraded.
And earlier in the week, a top U.S. diplomat told lawmakers the settlement with the Taliban is a potential turning point.
The Taliban face a fundamental choice between two very different futures. They can embrace a negotiated path to peace, make the transition from a violent insurgency to a political movement, and be part of a nation that enjoys respect in the global community. But if they pursue a military takeover, They will face isolation, regional and international opposition, sanctions, and our and our allies' support for Afghan security forces will continue.
But since February 2020, the level of violence in Afghanistan has remained high. The Taliban has been blamed for explosions that killed at least 90 people earlier this month at a school outside Kabul. Catherine Gibson, VOA News, Washington.
The African Land Forces Summit brings together Africa's finest militaries and the U.S. Army, which meet annually to discuss security threats on the continent and how this group can tackle them. The leader of the American contingent briefed journalists after this year's summit held virtually. VOA's Anita Powell reports from Johannesburg.
In the 11 years since the U.S. Army began meeting with African land forces, the security landscape has changed significantly, says Major General Andrew Rowling, and so have the ways that militaries have tried to keep up with threats. The theme of the first summit, held in Washington in 2010, was building and maintaining strong relationships. This year, the whole event went virtual and was held over one day, with more than 40 countries represented, and with a much more negative theme, but with hope of more actual engagement in the future.
This year, the summit's theme was maintaining security in a degraded environment. We discussed military pandemic responses, the effects of the pandemic on operations, and its effects on training and exercises. Though we were not able to meet in person this year, I look forward to next year when I'm hoping and confident we surely will. We look forward to training with our counterparts through exercises and security cooperation activities in the near future.
In fact, Rowling said, the unit he commands, the U.S. Army's Southern European Task Force Africa, will meet up next month with partners in North Africa for African Lion 21, an exercise that had to be canceled last year because of the coronavirus pandemic. The inability to get actual boots on the actual ground because of pandemic restrictions has transformed the way these important partnerships work, Rowling said, but not necessarily for the worse. Previously, he says, collaboration meant bringing 200 to 300 people under one tent. Now, he says,
what we've been able to do over the course of the pandemic is decentralize that activity into a point where what used to be side-by-side mission planning is now being done on collaborative tools such as Zoom and Microsoft Teams.
Specific threats discussed at this year's conference included terrorism and pandemic-related instability. When the group gathers again a year from now, all parties hope the pandemic will just be a memory. Anita Powell, VOA News, Johannesburg.
The Homeland Security Department plans to ramp up social media tracking as a way of fighting domestic violent extremism. AP Washington correspondent Sagar Magani reports.
Officials say they want to better monitor and respond to storylines gaining traction on social media that could incite violence. They say analysts would be trained on how to distinguish a threat from an exercise of free speech. One official notes the mission is not to police thought, but rather to protect against violence. But civil rights advocates worry the move could undermine civil liberties, particularly in communities of color and among groups who've been the earlier focus of intensified surveillance. Sagar Magani, Washington.
This is the Voice of America. South Korean President Moon Jae-in is hoping Friday's White House meeting with President Joe Biden will lead to renewed diplomatic urgency by the U.S. to curb North Korea's nuclear program. The White House, however, is signaling that it is taking a longer view on one of the most difficult foreign policy challenges Biden faces. Maldives police have arrested the last suspect in a bombing that severely wounded the country's former president. Authorities have blamed Islamic extremists for the assassination attempt on Mohamed Nasheed, who is the parliament speaker and has been an outspoken critic of religious extremism in the predominantly Sunni Muslim nation. The man arrested was the fourth suspect sought in the May 6 bombing. You are listening to International Edition on the Voice of America. I am Chinedu Ofo, broadcasting from Washington, D.C. Myanmar's Junta Appointed Election Commission will dissolve Aung San Suu Kyi's National League for Democracy Party because of what it said was fraud in a November election, news outlet Myanmar Now said on Friday, citing a commissioner. Jason Albano of Reuters reports.
The party of Myanmar's deposed leader Aung San Suu Kyi is set to be dissolved. Local news outlet Myanmar Now reported the news on Friday. It said the junta-appointed election commission made the decision against Suu Kyi's National League for Democracy over what it said was fraud in a November election. Myanmar Now said the decision was made during a meeting with political parties that was boycotted by many parties, including the NLD. A spokesman for the junta did not immediately respond to requests for comment. A spokesman for a pro-democracy national unity government, which opposes the military, also did not respond to requests for comment, though it said it had representatives at the meeting. Myanmar's military took power at the start of February, after alleging fraud in a November election swept by Suu Kyi's party. Since then, Myanmar activists say more than 800 people have been killed by security forces in protests that broke out after the coup.
That's Jason Albano of Reuters. The Internal Displacement Monitoring Center reports the number of people displaced inside their own countries because of conflict, violence, and weather-related disasters reached an all-time high of 55 million by the end of 2020. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
Experts tracking these events thought sanity would prevail during the COVID-19 pandemic, resulting in fewer conflicts and triggering fewer forced displacements. They also hoped global efforts against climate change to prevent disasters would protect more people. However, the Secretary General of the Norwegian Refugee Council, Jan Egeland, says the verdict is in and it is not good. He says last year, conflict and disasters caused more than 40 million new displacements, with some people being forced to move many times out of their homes.
40 million times a child, a woman or a man was displaced in 2020. That's more than one person per second. And it's continuing, so a lot of people have been displaced also in 2021 while we speak.
The report says Syria has the highest number of internally displaced people, followed by the Democratic Republic of Congo and Colombia. It says sub-Saharan Africa, the Middle East, and North Africa generated 90% of all new conflict-related displacements. The director of the Internal Displacement Monitoring Center, Alexandra Bilek, says escalating violence in Ethiopia and strengthening of extremist groups in Mozambique and Burkina Faso fueled some of the world's fastest growing displacement crises.
In Ethiopia, we're looking at over 500,000 new displacements that were triggered by violence in the Tigray region, alongside, as you know, reports of human rights violations and abuses. But in across the rest of the continent, we saw how armed groups exploited simmering disputes and expanded their influence across the Sahel, as well as in Nigeria, Somalia, and Mozambique.
Weather-related events, primarily storms and floods, were responsible for 98% of all new disaster displacements recorded last year. The report says nearly 70% took place in South Asia and East Asia and the Pacific. Elsewhere, it says the Atlantic hurricane season was the most active on record, with 30 main storms. It notes hurricanes Laura, Eta, and Iota alone triggered 2.7 million new displacements across 14 Central American and Caribbean countries. It adds 1.7 million displacements were recorded in the United States from devastating wildfires and hurricanes. Authors of the report cite this as an important reminder that high-income countries are just as exposed to disasters as low- and middle-income countries. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Scientists working to slow the spread of malaria are hoping that reducing the disease's primary spreaders, mosquitoes, will save lives. Henry Wilkins has more from Burkina Faso.
The mosquito-borne disease, malaria, kills more than 400,000 people each year, the vast majority in Africa. Target Malaria, an international group of scientists, is working in Burkina Faso on a genetic solution. Abdoulaye Diabaté is with the West African Countries Research Institute for Science and Health, IRSS.
The objective of Target Malaria is to develop a genetic control tool specifically applied to mosquitoes to be able to drastically reduce or eliminate the density of mosquitoes.
The scientists are genetically modifying mosquitoes so their offspring will be only male, and any females they mate with after release will also produce just males. Since only female mosquitoes spread malaria, the disease should drop off quickly along with their population. In Bana village, where the genetically modified mosquitoes were first tested in 2019, locals were initially worried about the experiment.
At the beginning, people thought that the survey was to release mosquitoes in the village that will give us more diseases. But since we are working together, we do understand exactly what their purpose is. We even help them in their work, like collecting the mosquitoes.
GM, genetically modified mosquitoes, are another possible solution to malaria tested in Burkina Faso. The country also pioneered pesticide-infused mosquito nets. Oxford University's Jenner Institute in April announced a malaria vaccine tested in Burkina Faso with a breakthrough 77% efficacy. Target Malaria says climate and environment play a large part in the country's cutting-edge malaria research.
The WHO 2019 World Malaria Report highlights that over 94% of malaria cases and over 94% of malaria deaths took place in the African region. Therefore, when seeking out institutions to partner with, Target Malaria sought out institutions in countries with significant malaria burden and a strong desire to do something about it.
The West African Coordination and Cooperation Organization for the Fight Against Endemic Diseases was set up in the 1960s and headquartered in Burkina Faso. The research institute's Diabaté points out that their scientists are the third generation of malaria researchers. And thanks to their hard work, says Diabaté, Africa's deadly malaria problem is closer to being solved. Henry Wilkins for VOA News, Bobo Dioulasso, Burkina Faso.
A U.S. Space Force defense satellite is launched into space, plus China makes it to Mars, and a satellite made of wood is scheduled for launch later this year. VOA's Arasha Rabasadi has the week in space.
Three, Atlas ignition, two.
Aboard this rocket sits a defense satellite for the U.S. Space Force. The U.S.-based company United Launch Alliance this week completed the launch after a 24-hour delay caused by the rocket's liquid oxygen system. The satellite is part of the Space-Based Infrared Geosynchronous Satellite Mission, or SBIRS, to serve as an early warning system for missile attacks. The latest launch is the fifth satellite to join the mission.
Zero.
Also this week, NASA launched the Black Brant 12 suborbital rocket. NASA says the mission looks to help scientists learn more about energy and momentum in regions of space that are magnetically connected. Part of that mission is releasing barium vapor into the sky. The agency says the vapor is harmless to the environment and public health. NASA released this still image of the launch, and the next one is scheduled for May 26th. And China this week released these images of a Chinese rover landing on Mars. The mission is one of exploration, and the rover's name is Zhurong after a Chinese god of fire. China joins the United States and the former Soviet Union as the only countries to have landed on Mars, with the U.S. being the only country to successfully do so more than once. Back on Earth, private spaceflight company SpaceX completed its 15th mission this year aboard a Falcon 9 rocket. It launched another 52 satellites as part of its Starlink global broadband network. Astronomers have said the satellites block their view of anything beyond them. SpaceX says the satellites will bring high-speed internet to underserved communities. Finally this week, if all goes according to plan, the atmosphere will soon have in its orbit the most eco-friendly satellite ever. Designers built the WESA WoodSat from plywood and resin to see how it could withstand space. WoodSat's Yari Makinen says the mission is about research. Say the satellite could reduce fossil fuel emissions from manufacturing traditional satellites by replacing materials with sustainable wood. It would also reduce the amount of metal space junk orbiting Earth. WoodSat is scheduled for launch later this year. Arash Arabasadi, VOA News.
A Japanese journalist who was freed from a Myanmar prison said Friday that military and police interrogators repeatedly asked him about his friends, clients, and made-up allegations. Yuki Kitazuma also said other inmates told him about abuses they suffered at the hands of authorities, including repeated beatings during non-stop day-long interrogations. Kitazuma was detained at Yangon's notorious insane prison for a month before his release and returned to Japan last week. He was arrested while covering the aftermath of February's military coup. Police accused him of several offenses, including violating the terms of his visa. That's it for our show today. For more in-depth and breaking news 24 hours a day, please visit voanews.com. On behalf of our producer, Nadia Taha, and our managing editor, Kate Pound Dawson, I am Chinedu Ofor in Washington. Thank you so much for listening, and have a great weekend.